Welcome to the Talk Theater in Chicago podcast, your audio source for what's going on in the Chicago theater scene. This is the episode for June 30th, 2008, and on this episode, Tom Williams interviews Ed Rutherford about Promethean Theater Ensemble's latest production, Six Characters in Search of an Author. Also, we have Chicago's theater news for you, so get ready, Chicago, and let's talk theater.
This is Tom Williams, and you are listening to Talk Theater in Chicago's interview podcast. Our guest this week is Ed Rutherford, who has the lead, plays the director, in Promethean Theater's Six Characters in Search of an Author, which I think is a very important play, and this is a nice production. Hello, Ed.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for having me on.
Great. Tell us what got you guys to select this play to do at this time.
Well, Promethean Theater Ensemble, one of the big things that we're all about, in fact, it's part of our mission, is to bring audiences and artists together to collaborate in storytelling. And we're all about engaging imagination and producing plays that are rooted in creativity, language, and ideas. And what I love about this play, written by Luigi Pirandello, is that it's got kind of a it's absolutely packed with interesting ideas about the nature of what we do, the nature of theater, the interaction between the characters that an actor plays and the actors themselves, and also actually more broadly about the differences and interactions between illusion and reality, like most Pirandello, it examines whether one person's individual truth is true for many people, or, you know, Pirandello's stance is basically that we are sort of wandering around the world each with our own truths and sort of have difficulty communicating with each other regardless. And so the ideas of that are fascinating. And then just from a perspective as an actor and as a theater company, Six Characters in Search of an Author in particular presents a wonderful opportunity to sort of poke gentle and sometimes not so gentle fun at theater rehearsals, at certain theater types, whether it's the director that's really full of himself or the diva leading lady, all sorts of fun characters like that.
Yes. So carry us through now so that people who aren't familiar with this classic play set it up for us. You're the director, and you're starting to do a rehearsal of a play that no one really kind of wants to do, right?
But yeah.
They're sort of stuck.
And what's kind of ironic is actually the play that within Six Characters in Search of an Author, the play that this theater company and the director are rehearsing at the beginning, ironically enough, is actually a play by Luigi Pirandello that he'd written previously called The Rules of the Game.
And I didn't know that. That's a nice little point.
Yeah, we did a little bit of research on that at the beginning of the rehearsal process, and it is kind of a melodramatic piece, It explores some of the ideas that Pirandello dealt with a little bit later when he was writing, but actually in a lot of ways it sort of was a typical melodrama. There's a husband who's got a wife, and the wife is having an affair with a soldier, so the husband challenges the soldier to a duel and basically conspires to have the soldier die, basically. It's very melodramatic and kind of a very similar to a lot of theater that was being done at the time.
Well, thank God you didn't do that.
Exactly. I mean, and fortunately for us in the audience, that rehearsal for Rules of the Game is interrupted by these six strange figures, a father, a mother, their son, a stepdaughter, and then these two, I guess I can sort of definitely say eerily silent children, a boy and a girl. And at first we think that they're loony, but then it turns out that they really are six characters that a playwright had written, had thought of, and started to write a story for, and then abandoned, turned away from, decided to stop writing about them. And they, since they already had been conceived, they already had a life to them, and they sort of step out of their drama and go looking for somebody to help them finish the story. And even though the director of the play isn't an author, they decide that it's close enough for their purposes and enlist his help to tell the story that they were created for.
Yeah, and you have a major role in this because you end up in the debate with the father figure on what's this about, because you think they're kind of nutty, right?
Yes, I definitely think they're crazy. At first, I think it's some sort of joke that maybe has been played on me by somebody else in the company. Wondering, you know, in the real world, if this happened, probably they would be evicted by security about 2 minutes into the process. And it's true. A lot of the play sort of frames itself as a debate between the director and the father about the nature of illusion and reality and what's possible on stage. One of the issues, I guess, that Pirandello points out repeatedly is that no matter how realistic you try to be on stage, there's always this inherent artificiality that sort of steps in. Even in, I guess, an example I would think of is the wonderful play that Steppenwolf just did, August Osage County. It's a very realistic play, but at the same time, you have the actors speaking up to be heard by that audience that supposedly isn't there. All that sort of thing. Like, there's always that inherent artificiality, no matter how realistic you try to be.
Yeah, there's some terrific speeches and debates back and forth with you and the father, who was played by Jack McCabe.
Yep. Great guy.
Good veteran actor, who's been around forever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we were pleased to get when we were casting this. We were definitely very pleased to get not just actors that were the right age as far as more mature actors, but also managed to find, too, the kids are really sweet, too. The boy and the girl are the right age and very professional and well-behaved and everything.
Yeah, and so let's go on. So now you've got all these prima donnas waiting, and all of a sudden you're being interrupted. And then you start, what's the thing that turns you on? All of a sudden you start buying into their story.
Well, I guess the metaphor I use, kind of jokingly, but there's an element of truth there, is this play sort of turns into almost, I sort of describe it as an episode of Jerry Springer a little bit,
okay.
With the director as sort of the Jerry Springer figure. The story, which I don't want to give away too much of,
no,
but
no.
It's really twisted and dramatic, the interactions between these characters and then sort of the tragic story of what happened to them is really gripping, and the director more and more starts to be drawn into the story and basically want to find out what happens, even at the expense eventually of his own company of actors, really.
Yeah, and I like the scenes where you're using the six characters sort of to audition or play out their parts. But they're really rehearsing because you plan on replacing them with your professional actors.
Exactly,
right?
And that's one of the main points of the play. To the director, the story of the characters is just a tool that he can use to make a play with his own company of actors. Where the problem comes in is to the characters, it's real. There is no illusion to them. What happened to them is what has happened to them, what continues to happen to them, and if they act it out is what really does happen to them. And I guess the director is so short-sighted that he fails to see that.
Yeah, and of course, with the insistence of some strong personalities among the six.
Yeah, especially the Jack as the father, and also Michelle as the stepdaughter is just a really fiery figure, and she has her own agenda in the room of what she wants to accomplish in approaching the company.
Yeah, and what's been the reaction of the audiences to the show?
Well, very positive. It's a mix of things. What I love about this piece, fortunately, is that even though it's this really cerebral play with all these ideas and admittedly very wordy passages, and it's got some really gripping drama to it, we also are poking fun at ourselves a little bit at time, and we really give the audience a chance to laugh. And frankly, just from my point of view, speaking as an actor who's been in a lot of comedy, it's like finding water when you're lost in the desert, when the audience laughs at something when you're doing a more serious play.
Well, the opening night audience that I attended really got hooked into the play.
Mm-hmm.
And at first, nobody knows how to react to this because you don't have an idea where it's going. But that's where the stagecraft and the acting talent wins out. You find a way of hooking us into it. Once we hook into it, you can go on with the debate for hours, and you've got us.
Yeah, well, one thing I think that's a really big part of that is our director, Joe Feliciano. In rehearsals, he made a really big deal about the interactions between the acting company. We spend actually a lot of time at the beginning of the action and throughout the play interacting with each other and forming the relationships between the director and the other actors. And as long as we keep that really real, I think that becomes compelling to the audience, even if we're getting into a more cerebral point of debate, philosophically, basically.
Yeah, and there's enough comic relief in it too.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, it's a very smart piece. Well, what got you guys to do this play at this time? Was it because it was an ensemble piece, or I mean, thank God you did. It's refreshing to see a classic play done so well.
Well, I think that one thing that we're really really enthused about as a company is the power of the theater, and a lot of our plays do touch on that. For example, in our first season, we did Our Country's Good, which is about Australian inmates putting on a play back when Australia was a penal colony for the British Empire, and so this piece is also about the power of the theater and also further exploring actually its limitations as well. And that's one thing that really attracted us to the piece. And also, it's a lot more ambitious. I mean, it's got a very large cast for a storefront piece, or relatively large when compared to some of the other productions that we've done. And we decided we want to take a step forward and do something really meaty and hard, and basically see what we could do with it.
Well, I thought it was a terrific piece, and
thank you.
And it's very important that this work be done. And let's good time for a little commercial for it. It's at City Lit Theater, which is 1020 West Bryn Mawr. What days do you run?
We're Thursday through Saturdays at 8 p.m. and Sundays at 2 p.m. Through July 12th.
Through July 12th.
Mm-hmm.
Have you been getting good audiences?
Decent. We always, for those listening, we always eagerly and delightedly welcome more.
Oh yeah. Yeah, this is good summer fare, and it's a good piece of theater, and it's easy to get to, right? Either off Lakeshore Drive or right off the Bryn Mawr Red Line stop.
It's basically right next to the Red Line stop.
Yeah. Okay. Now tell us about Promethean Theater Group. You told us your theme, but what actually got you guys to get this group started?
Well, a lot of us, I think where it all began is a lot of us, not all of us certainly, but a lot of us went to Northwestern University.
God, you guys are like, every time I pick up a program, there's at least one or two Northwestern grads in the cast.
Yeah, there certainly are a lot of us. Well, yeah. I think part of it is, so many of us who go up there get a taste of the Chicago theater scene, and it's just wonderful here. Working here is wonderful. It's really a community, and we get so hooked on the work that's possible to do here that a lot of us want to stay. In our particular case, though, I think one thing that's a little bit unusual about Promethean is it seems like a lot of companies, when they form, and it's a lot of college graduates, they sort of form right away after graduation. And most of our company graduated in 2003, but most of us decided to sort of, do our own thing, sort of dive into the city scene and figure out, what the deal was, get to know people, understand how things work before we got together and formed the company. And I guess we started filing our paperwork and everything in 2005 with our first production, Christopher Durang's Beyond Therapy, which I directed, in fall 2006.
Okay, so you guys just all of a sudden just didn't want to start a theater company. You guys knew what the scene was about.
Exactly, yeah. And just, I mean, I think we're interested in doing good theater first and foremost, but also there's fortunately enough of us, to be honest, that are pragmatic about the nuts and bolts of having experienced the theater scene, knowing stuff like, oh, we have to do this many performances to be Jeff eligible after a couple of seasons, that sort of thing. Like, it's a good mix of...
Speaking of that, are you guys Jeff eligible yet?
Not yet. Our next show, season 3, which we have announced, by the way... Season 3 will be eligible.
All right. What are you going to be doing in season 3?
We're going to be doing starting off with Tony Kushner play The Illusion.
Oh, that's a good play.
Oh, yeah. I love it. And it's also actually, you'll notice if you're familiar with the play, it's kind of about the power of the theater as well.
Yes, it is.
Yep. It's a big theme with us. And then in 2009, spring or early summer, we're going to be doing Measure for Measure by William Shakespeare. Because the other thing we have to admit is most of us are huge Shakespeare geeks. We love it.
Yeah, and there's a need for what I call storefront Shakespeare done well.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you guys have an ensemble with the chops to be able to handle it.
Yeah, well, we're really excited about doing it.
How about musicals? You see any of that in your...
Well, I mean, you certainly know. I mean, being familiar with my work, you know that I certainly love musical theater.
Oh yeah, you've been in a lot of them,
doing it and everything. I know that as a company, I don't know that specifically as a genre that's what we're really interested in. We're certainly not excluding it, but it would have to be exactly the right piece that sort of fits in with what we as a company are about. I know, personally, I love it. I'd be happy to see it, but it could be, practically speaking, I imagine it'll probably be a while before we're seriously considering doing a musical.
Yeah, well, there's a lot more. You add a lot of elements when you go from drama to musical.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that you're familiar with. Well, tell us some of the people in this play and they're part of your ensemble.
Okay. Well, obviously, I'm an ensemble member, mm-hmm. and I'm in it. I'm playing the director, and we also have Beth Wolf playing the second leading lady. She's our company member, and Nick Lake is playing our stage manager. He's not this is when I explain the play to people, it gets a little confusing because I have to say, no, I'm not directing it. I'm playing the director, and so Nick's not stage managing it. He's playing the stage manager, and we also have Kyla Embry as the first leading lady. She's the you'll remember from the play. She's the really prima donna-esque character.
Yeah, she's a very good actor.
Mm-hmm. So that's those of us who are in the ensemble that are in the show, and we also have great support from our guest artists, Evan Lindner, who's playing the juvenile, Michelle and Jack, we were talking about before. We also have Jeff Brown is the leading man, and Susan Adler is the mother.
I like her. She's been around. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, she's wonderful. Yeah. Yeah, it's my first time working with her, but it was great to get to know her on this project. And Stephanie Palko in a hilarious cameo that I can't say too much about as Madame Pace.
No, you know, you don't want to ruin that. Yeah, but she is hilarious.
And Marco Tazzioli as the son. It's just a really solid ensemble. We've been getting along really great in rehearsals, and it's great to show up and work with them every night.
Well, people always ask me to ask this question. Sometimes I forget. How long is the rehearsal process for a show? I mean, here's a big cast show. Complicated, you know, a lot going on, long speeches and so mm-hmm. forth. How long is your process?
Well, we started rehearsals on May 18th, if I remember correctly, and then we were open by, our first preview was on the 20th of June, so I guess about a month, maybe a little bit more for this particular one. It actually was longer than a lot of rehearsal processes that I've been part of, just because I've worked with a lot of the union theaters in town, and they really abbreviate the rehearsal processes.
Yeah, the equities. Yeah, because they're paying it. There's like 2 weeks of intensity, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But your process, it's about a month.
Yep, and a little bit more than that sometimes. Like I'd say roughly 4 to 6 weeks, depending on the project.
Okay, and now casting. Since you have an ensemble and you have ensemble members,
mm-hmm.
How does that work? Do they have to audition like everyone else? Or?
They do, and we definitely make it clear, especially when we have a guest director, that the guest director does have the final say on casting.
Let's not go over that too fast. Because in a lot of theater groups, the guest directors kind of, you know, get sort of stuck with a few people, whether he wants them or not.
Yeah.
That shows a lot of integrity of your group.
Well, thank you. Thank you. It's a very, it's just very important that we don't hamper the creativity of the director when we have them work with us. The only preferential treatment, I guess, that they do get currently is that if they like, they do get some extra time to work with the director during the callback process, but the final decision is always the director's.
Okay, and how do you come up with the directors? I mean, like, you've picked your shows for next year.
Mm-hmm.
Have you picked the directors?
Or? Yes, we have. Okay. The director of The Illusion is going to be Russell Burns. He is a company member of ours, not an ensemble member. That's actually two distinct groups of people, and also our production manager. So a lot of us have been working with Russell for a while. He's sort of the mastermind behind a lot of the logistical aspects of getting six characters up and running. And also our Measure for Measure director is going to be June Eubanks, who hasn't worked on our main stage before, but she has worked with us as an actress. We have this side series that we like to do. Like I told you, we're huge Shakespeare geeks.
Mm-hmm.
We have this Evening of Shakespeare series that we like to do, sort of a one-weekend event here and there, maybe once or sometimes twice a season. Just a quick thing at various venues around the city. Just, throw up some scenes with a unifying theme, usually, of Shakespeare that we just really want to take a look at and explore.
Well, those are nice intros.
Mm-hmm.
Do you do those for like students or younger people?
Well, we always alter or sort of scale our pricing so that it's affordable for students and industry people as well. We're looking into that a little bit more for next season to see if we can actually court groups of students for a reduced rate, but nothing's definite yet.
Good, because you know we're starting to do a lot of that in Chicago, and we need to do that to get the younger audiences, yeah. as I'm sure you're aware of.
Well, as a company, we do work with young people. We have an outreach program where we sort of partner with Chicago Public Library to do what they call it is the Teen Volume Project, where Promethean Ensemble members volunteer to work with teenagers at the Chicago Public Library branches to work on sort of stage reading adaptations of various young adult literature and then present it as a performed reading at library branches around the city.
That's a great idea.
Oh, so it's a lot of fun and great kids.
Yeah, and how are the kids responding to it?
Oh, pretty well. We have pretty good response. We have some of them are really enthusiastic about it, have been doing it since we started the project, and it's a little sad because some of them are starting to graduate and go to college now, so we won't see them around so much for a while.
Well, but they'll be back as part of your audience.
Yeah, I hope so, yeah. or maybe even as actors themselves in the community.
Wow, there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
So tell us some of the goals of your theater group.
Well, looking forward, actually, that's something that we've been discussing a lot, sort of trying to develop a plan for going forward. I know as far as ambition, we'd like to be doing the kind of quality of work where we're getting recognized more for our efforts, which I guess is an important point as we become Jeff eligible next season. As far as specific projects, we have a lot of stuff in the pipeline that I unfortunately feel like I can't talk too much about,
okay.
just because there's
no,
some rights issues we're trying to settle and that kind of thing.
Sure.
But we're excited about next season and looking ahead a little bit, a few other projects that we're really, really, really keyed up about.
Well, you know, with a lot of the established non-equity theater groups going equity, like Timeline next year, you guys are kind of moving up and going to fill that void, because I think we need more ensemble-based non-equity groups, because this is where the creative theater is happening.
Yeah, definitely.
Because, I mean, you imagine trying to do this show you're doing now with a large cast as an equity show. It'd be great to do, but take, what, a couple $100,000 to do it?
At least, yeah.
Yeah.
It's true.
Yeah, and you've got a lot of actors in the show that have worked in the equity houses, like you have.
Mm-hmm. And some of our other ensemble members, I know maybe you're familiar with Tom Weber.
Yes.
Yeah, he's an ensemble member with us, so he's not in this particular one, but he's definitely been around a lot. Just got to see him recently in Drood out at Noble Fool, for example.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I saw that was a terrific production.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you guys have the blend of the young talent and the veterans. That's a nice group.
Yep.
Do you guys have any plans for maybe getting your own venue?
Well, we love that, but it's just always cost is always a factor. It's just the economic realities of the situation are it's expensive for a storefront company to rent, but to own your own space, i.e., you know, to have a lease on a building is even more expensive, unfortunately.
Yeah, and it's quite a commitment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, you know, you keep rolling and keep doing what you're doing. You never know what's going
to
happen.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think that's something we'd love to have at some point, definitely.
Yeah, yeah, and who knows? Some of these places fall in, rather quickly. Let's talk about you now.
Okay.
You're another one of those Northwestern guys, and you've been in a lot. Tell us some of the musicals you've been in.
Well, I guess the most recent one, I just this past Christmas, I did the remount of A Wonderful Life with Porch Light.
Yes, you did.
I did, may it rest in peace, I did The Cradle Will Rock with White Horse Theater Company a while back. They're no longer producing, but that was a wonderful experience.
Yeah, those guys did some good shows.
Yeah. Yeah. I know, I was a huge fan of that one. Like, I think as a performer, I'm attracted to some of the more interesting and more challenging pieces, or at least stuff that I find personally challenging somehow.
All right, what's some of the better shows that you think you were in?
Well, not too many people maybe saw this because it was way out in the suburbs, but a little bit after I got out of college, I think probably still one of the things I'm most proud of is I did a production of Into the Woods out of Buffalo Theater Ensemble in Glen Ellen.
You know, I saw that.
Yeah, they're.
You know, I see everything. Yeah, I saw that. I remember you in that. That's a tough show to do too.
Yeah, because I'm an absolute Sondheim fanatic, and so to do, I guess Into the Woods is probably one of my favorite Sondheim shows, and I was playing Jack in that, and it was sort of my favorite part, my favorite show. It was just a wonderful experience, and they're a small equity company, Buffalo Theater Ensemble, sort of associated with the College of DuPage out there, and
yeah,
they do really solid work.
Yeah, you almost need a passport to get there, but
that's true. But it's
worth it. They do some good theater there.
Yeah, I was commuting from from the north side of Chicago in my car, and I was taking the Eisenhower because I didn't know any better.
Oh no!
At the time, so I was in tears and horrible traffic jams like every night trying to get out there.
Yeah.
But otherwise, it was a really great experience.
Yeah, and that is a strong piece. And Marriott did a terrific production of
mm-hmm.
that, too.
Yep, I saw that. Actually, a music directed by, I'm totally name-dropping now. It seems like a lot of people who graduated the same year as me or around the same year as me are really active in the city just now. But I graduated the same year as Doug Peck.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, so I'm sort of a fan of his music directing work.
I think he's a major, major talent, and I've interviewed him, and you know, when you hear his background, and you realize, and he tells you his age, you can't believe it.
Yeah, exactly.
And everyone says, figures he's got to be 35 or 40 because his credentials. You know, when you find out he's under 30.
I should hasten to add, in case Doug hears this, that he does not look 35 or 40.
No, I don't think he does, but just his background.
Yeah.
So tell us some of the people from your class, because it's one of the top classes at Northwestern.
Well, you mentioned Jenny Powers, actually. Yeah. Right before we were talking about this, you mentioned I think it's Dangerous Beauty is the musical
we're
workshopping
up
at Evanston.
Right.
Well, she actually she went there the same time as I did. She was in my acting studio our senior year, and so there's her. She's fabulous. I mean, I think everyone at Northwestern pretty much knew that she was going to be on Broadway within like 5 years of graduation, or if she wasn't, it's because she decided she didn't want to be, basically.
Yeah.
And Michael Mahler, just a year down from me, still in friendly terms, he's just a great guy. And,
oh yeah,
I hope you caught the Newt Rockne musical he wrote.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And I interviewed David Bell. We did a podcast with Dave, but I thought Michael's show was terrific.
Yeah.
And you know, if it had gone to Broadway with as bad a year as they had, it would have won hands down. You know.
Oh, I kind of have a soft spot in my heart for Xanadu.
Do you really?
Yeah. Oh. It seems kind of fun. What I've heard and seen of it.
Oh, go see the movie. They said the only reason that it was done was the director, I'm blanking now, Gene Kelly, was broke.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that was the word on that. I don't know. But you guys have quite a couple of years going there at Northwestern. A lot of major talent coming out of it.
Well, it's a great school. I think, I mean, when I'm from North Carolina originally.
Are you really?
Yeah,
oh,
actually.
Okay.
I grew up in Raleigh. And when I started going there, basically what I loved about it, and more importantly, I guess, the reason my family was okay with me majoring in theater there is because it's definitely a liberal arts setting and not a conservatory school, even though the training is so intensive and you get so much experience there.
Yeah, you're still getting the academics.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it's one of the arguably one of the three best colleges in America.
Yes. Cool.
So you decided to stay after that, right? You got a mm-hmm. taste of Chicago.
Oh yeah, just everything about the community I just sort of fell in love with. I mean, the big stuff, the small stuff. I guess case in point, like one of the first things I remember seeing when I started Northwestern was Mary Zimmerman's production of The Odyssey at the Goodman.
Yes.
And I grew up as sort of a Greek mythology buff, and so to see that, something that I would have told you if you'd asked me before I saw that would be impossible to stage, actually coming to life on stage was a thrilling experience for me. And that sort of that story theater aesthetic that she uses is actually a big part of the Chicago theater aesthetic.
Yes, it is.
And so after I saw that, I was pretty much hooked.
Well, you know, Mary Zimmerman specializes in mounting shows that are impossible to mount and makes them work.
Yep.
Yeah. And she's on the faculty up at Northwestern, too, now.
Yeah, though, unfortunately, I never got to take class with her. The scheduling just never seemed to work out.
Oh, okay. So tell us, what are your plans, say, 5 years from now? Where do you plan on being?
Well, I love acting, and I don't think I ever want to give that up. But I also keep as busy as I can, given that I also act as a director. And I have a few projects. I was speaking of Mary Zimmerman before. Not that I'm on the same level as Mary Zimmerman, but I have a few projects that are kind of like that. Stories that got under my skin that with the Chicago Story Theater approach become possible to present on stage to a live audience that I really want to take on and hopefully get done sometime in the next 3 to 5 years.
Great. Yeah, we need that, because that's how the great theater happens. It gets under your skin, and you just can't let it go until you get it on stage.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
You also did a stint as a theater reviewer.
Oh, yes.
Tell us about that. Yeah.
Well, I guess I was the theater editor for Center Stage Chicago starting in about October 2004 through about June of 2006, I think. Basically, the reason for it was I love seeing theater. You and I actually run into each other occasionally when we're seeing things. And I basically see as much of it as I can when I'm not doing it. Sometimes, literally 5 or 6 times a week, I'll go see a show. Just because I think, first of all, I love it, but also as an artist, you learn when you're not learning by doing, you can still learn by observing. Maybe not as well or as thoroughly as you would if you were actually in the play, but you still pick up stuff, you absorb stuff. As a director, directing vocabulary, ways of forming stage pictures and stuff that you can sort of add to your repertoire, or as an actor, just observing people, you know, it's kind of like in tennis, you want to play with people who are a little bit better than you to get better. Seeing actors be better than you helps you grow.
Oh, basically. Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So that was a terrific experience.
Yeah.
I think you're at a level now of as a director and an actor that it would be pretty hard for you to keep doing that, right? It almost becomes a conflict.
Well, that's finally why I had to stop doing it. I did it at first because, you know, I wanted to see as much theater as possible.
Sure, that's
a smart
idea.
And when you're a
critic,
you see it for free.
Oh, yeah.
Basically.
Oh, yes.
And the theater scene in Chicago is diverse enough and large enough that you can do that for a while and still be active in the community and manage to avoid conflict of interest. But sooner or later, if you want to stay active as a performer or active as a director, you have to stop the criticism because you will run into conflict of interest. And finally, when I left the position, it was because that was starting to happen. I remember, I guess when I saw the writing on the wall was when I actually got asked about it at a callback for something.
Ooh.
And, you know, I decided, okay, it's time to choose. Either you're a critic or you're actually working in the community that you're covering. You need to make a choice.
Thank you for saying that, because I get people that apply because I'm always looking for reviewers, and they're, you know, actors or directors, and I won't do it because of that. What do you do if you rip a show that's really bad? Because you have to be honest with your audience, and then you go to that same group to audition. Ooh, that's awkward.
Well, it's awkward, but not as awkward as feeling like a theater company that you're auditioning for is worried that if they don't cast you, that you pan a show later. So I guess there were definitely some theaters I covered that I might audition for them going forward. And some of their shows I was less than kind to, but I don't feel bad about that because the ball's in their court. You know, the power in the situation is basically theirs. I don't have to concern myself with it.
Yeah. That was a smart decision to do that.
I think so.
Yeah.
What I would say is if you do, just as an aside, if you do want to take on actors or directors as theater reviewers, I think you can do that, but you have to set the rule where basically they're willing to say, the companies I cover are the companies that I will never, ever work for, work with, try to work with, period. End of story.
It's
like, you have to keep it as separate as possible.
Yeah. Well, thanks for that insight, because that helped. Well, this has been terrific. And folks, make sure you get out to see Six Characters in Search of an Author. It's a terrific play, and it's beautifully done. And Ed, thanks so much. This has been terrific, and keep up the good work.
Well, thank you very much, Tom. Thanks for having me on.
I'm sure I'll have you on again, particularly when you do one of these plays that are under your skin, because that's when the real great theater happens.
Yeah, I look forward to being able to announce that stuff.
All right, thanks.
Keep your fingers crossed. Thanks.
And folks, go see a play this week.
Hello, Chicago, and welcome to the Talk Theater in Chicago News podcast. I'm your host, Dustin Moat, bringing you the theater news for the week of June 30th, 2008. Live Bait Theater presents world premiere shows in the Filet of Solo Festival. This year's lineup for the festival, now in its 13th year, will have solo performances exploring spirituality, woodland creatures, and suburban sprawl. The 2008 Filet of Solo Festival includes Potholes on the Path to Enlightenment, that will be premiering on July 10th. A Dreadful Day begins on July 11th. Strip Mauled the Musical reveals itself on August 1st. Sweatalicious drips into theaters on August 8th. Me and My Dad's Stories opens on July 31st. And Sampler Superstars starts this July 25th. For tickets and more information on the Filet of Solo Festival, visit livebaittheater.org. Again, that's livebaittheater.org. Silk Road Theater Project has announced a collaboration with San Francisco's Golden Thread Productions and New York City's Lark Play Development Centers. Together, they will form Middle East America, a national new plays initiative. This will be a tri-coastal initiative to support development of Middle Eastern American playwrights and their plays. The MEA recipient will get a $10,000 commission to write a new play and then undergo intensive developmental support from the Lark in New York City. San Francisco's Golden Thread Productions and our Silk Road Theater Project will host stage readings and possible future productions at their theaters. This is a fantastic initiative and an incredible opportunity for an emerging Middle Eastern American playwright. For more information and application guidelines, visit MiddleEastAmerica.org. Again, that's MiddleEastAmerica.org. The application deadline is this July 31st, with the selected playwright being announced in September. Chicago Shakespeare Theater has announced that it will produce a stage reading of Romeo y Julieta. That's right, the Regional Theater Tony Award-winning team will co-produce a bilingual adaptation of Shakespeare's Romeo and Juliet. The production reimagines Shakespeare's story of two star-crossed lovers on opposite sides of a divided city within a modern Latino community. Henry Godinez of Teatro Vista and Chicago's Latino Theater Festival will direct the 75-minute work, and Chicago's own Luna Blues Machine will create the live music for the performance. Romeo y Julieta will be performed this July 25th through the 26th, and get this, admission is free. For more information, visit chicagoshakes.com. That's right, chicagoshakes.com. Wicked is helping to get visitors to Chicago this 4th of July by offering a $50 gas card when you purchase tickets to performances of Wicked this July 1st through July 6th. So just mention the code GAS at the time of ordering to receive your special gift card. For information on how to get tickets to Wicked, click on over to Theater in Chicago's Now Playing section. Thank you for listening to the Talk Theater in Chicago News podcast. Remember, you can find us here every Monday with more news ready for you to enjoy. So, until next Monday, that is the theater news from Talk Theater in Chicago, and I'm your host, Dustin Moat. Thank you for listening to the Talk Theater in Chicago podcast. I would like to thank Ed Rutherford for giving us the honor of interviewing him this week. I would also like to thank Tom Williams and Mark Meyer. Without them, this podcast would not be possible. And also, I would like to thank you, our listening audience. Remember, we will be here every Monday with a new episode ready for your listening pleasure. So, until next Monday, I'm your host, Dustin Moat, reminding you, Chicago, to keep talking theater.